From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action, and it's my privilege to be filling in for Tony Perkins today. Well, I'll kick off the show today with a closer look at an intriguing case that the Supreme Court just yesterday agreed to examine. A small Michigan funeral home fired a male employee who insisted on presenting himself as a woman to grieving families, despite a dress code to the contrary. I'll talk with John Bursch, Senior Counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom and former Solicitor General of the state of Michigan, to discuss what it means within the context of federal law. In my second segment, there's a new campaign that's being launched to save women's sports from the infiltration of transgender competitors. Jennifer Bryson, founder of Let All Play and part of the Save Women's Sports Coalition, joins me to discuss. At the bottom of the hour, Angela Wallace of Truth for Our Children joins me to talk about an important upcoming seminar this Saturday in Louisiana entitled Truth and Education, a forum on Common Core and its aftermath, at which our own Tony Perkins will be speaking. And in our last block, I will talk to Jonathan Sines, the president of Texas Values, the affiliate of Family Research Council in Austin, Texas. He will explain how Chick-fil-A is the latest example of government punishing a family business because of its religious beliefs and what might be done legislatively to stop it. As a reminder, you can locate our podcast online at tonyperkins.com. Also, for more information on today's guests and the subject matter we talk about here, you can follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins and me, if you'd like, at Sarah P. Perry. And we start today with a Supreme Court case that has legal pundits on the edge of their seat. While SCOTUS today decided to hear extended arguments as to whether or not the Trump administration may add a question about citizenship to the national 2020 census, it is this particular case that takes up the most significant issue concerning LGBTQ rights since the 2015 Obergefell decision. The Supreme Court is going to review a lower court decision that redefines the word sex in federal law to mean gender identity. Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys representing a Michigan funeral home filed a petition to ask the High Court to take the case, and the High Court also agreed to take up two other cases raising issues concerning sexual orientation. Joining me now to talk about this great news is Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel and former Solicitor General for the state of Michigan, in which this court took place, John Bursch. Welcome to Washington Watch, John.
Thank you, Sarah. I am delighted to be here.
So this case has rather an interesting history, and the factual predicate that presents the claim here really says a great deal about what the lower court and subsequently the Court of Appeals were willing to do when it comes to the notion of sex within federal legislation. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the federal government could force Harris Funeral Homes in Michigan and the owner, Thomas Ross, to allow a male employee who identified as female to dress in women's clothing when meeting with the deceased grieving family member and friends. Now, it should be stated that the funeral home had a clothing and dress policy onto which this particular employee signed. And the problem is forcing the funeral home to allow this male employee to present himself as a woman actually violates not only their dress code when he signed on in 2007, but takes a different interpretation of federal legislation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And you've set this up very well. There was a dress policy at the funeral home, as you can imagine. Things like employee tattoos were prohibited. Everyone had to wear dark-colored clothing. You couldn't have anything flashy in the way of jewelry or, you know, maybe coloring your hair or something like that, because the purpose of a funeral home is to not draw attention towards the staff, but to put all the attention on those who have lost their loved one. And when Harris Funeral Homes hired this employee in 2007, the employee agreed to comply with all those policies. And so when the employee decided to portray themselves as a different gender in 2013, that became an issue for the funeral home. And when they couldn't reach an agreement on that, the federal EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, targeted the funeral home and said that the federal law, which prohibits sex discrimination, also prohibits gender identity discrimination. And the Federal Court of Appeals agreed with that and basically rewrote the meaning of the word sex. Now, that creates two problems. The first, Congress enacted this federal law in 1964. At the time, everybody knew what sex meant. There weren't any arguments about sex versus gender expression or identity. And so the court basically took into its own responsibility the goal of updating the policy. But that's not what courts are supposed to do. We all learn in elementary school that the legislature or Congress gets to enact the laws, the president gets to sign them, and the judicial branch just interprets or applies them. They're not supposed to rewrite the laws. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, which I hope we can discuss at length, is that when you change sex to gender identity, it's a really drastic change with widespread consequences for everyone, including some of the women athletic issues that you're going to be talking about a little later in the show.
Now, this is very interesting to me because we understand that the transgender notion, this flexible notion, this hard to describe and define notion of fluid gender identity, something no longer within the boundaries of genetic, chromosomal, biological reality, but something that is perceived to be fluid and flexible and changing as a matter of course. This is really sort of one of the top dialogue points in the national discourse. So we're presented here with a case that I think many of us are encouraged that the Supreme Court has decided to take up. But I want to sort of vision cast a little bit, understanding now that we have Roberts and we have Kavanaugh who are essentially making up this new swing block. Do you have a sense, not only as an attorney involved with the case, but as somebody who studies judicial history and the makeup of the court and their interpretation of federal law, do you have a sense of which way this will go?
Well, they would certainly suggest, based on their past rulings, to be strongly in favor of the notion that courts don't get to make up or change the law. You may remember that Chief Justice Roberts very famously at his confirmation hearing says that judges are like umpires. They just call balls and strikes. They don't get to create the rules of the game. And Justice Kavanaugh, although he isn't on record as saying something similar to that, his record would certainly indicate he would support that, too. I would hope that the entire court, all nine justices, no matter where they fall on the political spectrum, would be able to support the idea that courts don't get to change the law.
So let's talk a little bit about this notion of gender identity and its interpretation within the context of federal law. A change within an understanding of sex to include gender identity in Title VII of the 64 Civil Rights Act, which really is sort of the tip of the spear for the definition of this in federal legislation. A change here would mean what kind of a change in other aspects of everyday life, particularly for women and girls?
Well, as you mentioned, sex is a word that's important and is used all across federal law. We shouldn't be surprised about that because men and women are different, and so sometimes the law will treat the sexes differently. So let me give you three examples. One, Title IX, which is the law passed in the 70s to give women more opportunities in high school and college athletics, specifically says that men and women have to have equal opportunities. But all of a sudden, if a man can say that he's a woman and participate in women's sports, you end up with situations like in Connecticut, where the women's high school state track meet and the sprinting events were completely dominated by two biological men who were identifying as women. And when that happens, it not only takes away opportunities for other women to compete in those finals, it also takes away the opportunity for college scholarships. And you can immediately see the implications in professional women's sports, too, like tennis or basketball. So the very thing that we were trying to protect in Title IX, women's opportunity, is taken away. Another example, we have a women's shelter up in Anchorage, Alaska, that services and cares for women who have been domestically abused, suffered physical, emotional, sexual abuse, and they can go to this shelter overnight for safety. Well, there's a man who appeared at the doorsteps, said he was a woman, and he wanted to sleep in the same room with the women sexual survivors. The city of Anchorage has a policy that says you can't discriminate based on gender identity, and they're insisting that the man has to be allowed to sleep with these abused women, even though the shelter did everything it could to make sure that the man was cared for. It's almost absurd. A third example, which is popping up in high schools and colleges all across the country, is, you know, a policy that would allow a student to decide what their gender is for themselves and choose their shower or restroom or locker room based on that perceived set of gender. And you can imagine how troublesome that is, again, especially for a young woman who's been a victim of sexual abuse, to be in a shower and then have a man come into it. So these are all the different ways, and there's many more, that changing the definition of sex to mean gender identity has enormous repercussions for society.
The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the employee, concluding that discrimination because of sex inherently includes discrimination against employees because of a change in sex. So let me play devil's advocate for a minute. How does one answer a charge that a change in sex amounts to discrimination based on one's gender identity? If you change, have you automatically implicated that term sex within federal legislation?
Well, that's just the thing, is that you can't change your sex no matter how hard you try. You can take hormone blockers, you can take testosterone or estrogen, you can even have plastic surgery and change parts of your body, but every single cell in your body will still maintain the chromosomes of either a male or a female. And it's really difficult to say to an employer, look, Facebook recognizes, what, 50, 60, 70 different genders right now, and you need to recognize all of those as distinct things and make sure that you treat everybody fairly with respect to those many dozens and dozens of genders. That's why federal law has always spoken in terms of men and women. It's objective. It's easily identifiable. It doesn't change over time the way gender expression is. You had mentioned how gender expression is fluid. Yeah, so to say that somehow an employer is responsible for accounting for all that is ridiculous. But, you know, at the bottom, preventing sex discrimination, men and women, protects the dignity of everyone. Redefining sex to mean something different does not, for all those different reasons and contexts that we've discussed.
So bottom line, we know that unelected officials, whether bureaucrats, whether judges, do not have the power to make choices for us to unilaterally redefine what is passed by Congress and a proper separation of powers. John, we are so grateful for your legal expertise. For more information on this case, go to adflegal.com. We will be following the case closely. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action. Coming up next, there is a new campaign that's been launched to save women's sports from infiltration of transgender competitors and address exactly that Title IX issue that John just shared with us. Jennifer Bryson, founder of Let All Play, joins me next to discuss.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action. It's my privilege to be sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, a new effort has been launched to stop transgender women, and that comes with very large air quotes, biological males, as it were, from competing against natural-born female athletes. The website SaveWomensSports.com is an organization that seeks to preserve biology-based eligibility standards for participation on female sports. A supporting partner of Save Women's Sports is LetAllPlay.org, and joining me now to discuss the notion of transgenderism in sports is Jennifer Bryson, its founder. Welcome, Jennifer.
Glad to be here, and thanks for addressing this important topic.
Well, let me tell you that the national dialogue gets curiouser and curiouser, a little bit like Alice in Wonderland, on the notion of men seeking existence within what were previously spaces reserved for the safety and advancement of women. And in fact, we find ourselves having this discussion about the notion of transgenderism and the flexibility of biological womanhood, suddenly creating spaces that were once protected through decades of advancement for women to provide them equal opportunity, suddenly infiltrated by anyone who decides that they indeed are a member of the opposite sex. So talk to me a little bit about how this has manifested itself within the sports format and what the goal of Save Women's Sports has been.
Well, you just mentioned a really important word, which is advancement. And you said decades of advancement. It's taken decades of hard work to provide opportunities for girls and women in sports. And those opportunities have been possible because in sports in America, at the amateur and professional and international level, we separate males and females, whether it's boys and girls or men and women. And that's because males and females have different bodies, and sports is are physical and embodied.
So there really is a perfect example of the differences between men and women within the context of an athletic environment, right? It really highlights how we are biologically, chromosomally distinct and different and ought to be competing with people who are on a level playing field. And we've heard the story about Selena Sewell, who herself is a track athlete, was missed of an opportunity, devoid of an opportunity to be able to participate for a college scholarship because she was beaten by two biological males who identified as women. So your colleague, Beth Stelzer, and you both participated recently on a Heritage panel discussing this very notion. And she said something I found was interesting in a word that I've not yet heard, but actually makes perfect sense related to this debate. She said that these men who present themselves as women, quote, bully women while claiming to be victims of bullying themselves, which is kind of a bizarre double standard, isn't it?
It is. And Beth is interesting because of her own personal experience. She had not been involved in athletics before. And as an adult, she got into powerlifting and she trained for several years and finally went to her first ever U.S. powerlifting competition. And that was in Minnesota recently. And at that specific competition, activists for transgenderism targeted that competition because the U.S. Powerlifting Association separates their competitions by men and women. And Beth was there competing for the very first time, and instead of an environment focused on athletics and competition, it was hollering and protesting and loud antics. And so she felt and experienced for the first time the incredible tensions that are being brought, as she experienced it, as bullying. And she's also been criticized now for speaking out, for maintaining a distinction between men and women, for powerlifting.
Now, it's very interesting that this has created allies across the entire breadth of the political spectrum, right? And even individuals who identify as lesbian or they call themselves feminists have seen the absolute insanity of taking that definition of biological womanhood on which so much of our federal legislation concerning sex really hinges, and deciding that they can make it a little more malleable as well. Does it surprise you that there have been so many unlikely allies coming together on this particular notion?
It's only surprising in how unusual it is today in our politics. But logically, it makes sense because women, whether they are religious women or whether they are secular feminists who have experienced how vulnerable women can be, for example, the need for women's shelters for domestic violence victims. And also, so many women today have received the great fortune of getting to participate in sports as girls and then into college and adults. And they know that this is something valuable and precious, and that in other parts of the world, girls and women don't have these opportunities. What I find much more strange is that there are many on the left who used to be advocates for women who are now advocating for replacing sex with gender identity in federal law, which would have a devastating impact on sports for girls and women.
I find it very interesting that Helen Keller's motto was alone we can do so little, together we can do so much, and this unlikely alliance of partners, individuals working together for what would ordinarily be considered common sense has really become a rarity. It is one of those situations in which we find ourselves standing shoulder to shoulder with individuals who might never have seen our perspective on things, but with whom we can fully agree on issues like this. And Martina Navratilova is a perfect example. She took an incredible amount of blowback strictly for saying what everyone automatically decades ago would have said, well, naturally, this is the case, and saying women's sports should be comprised of women competitors who maintain womanhood biologically. So for more information on this initiative, I want to encourage our listeners to go to letallplay.org. That is Jennifer Bryson's founding organization. And also go to savewomenssports.com. There you will see information about the individuals who have competed based on their gender identity against women who are biologically female. It presents a bit of an interesting landscape for the discussion that the Supreme Court will be having in the next few months on the notion of federal law and sexual identity. Jennifer Bryson has been my guest today. We look forward to talking to her again. Coming up next, we have Angela Wallace, who is going to discuss a Common Core panel that she'll be holding in Louisiana on August 27th. Tony Perkins will be speaking for us there. We encourage you to both attend and join us after this. You're listening to Washington Watch.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us today. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've got with us today Angela Wallace of Truth for Our Children. She's going to be talking about an important seminar on Saturday. Have you ever heard of the Common Core State Standards? Well, about 6 or 7 years ago, this was all the rage and dialogue about nationalized curriculum, testing to the standards, and teaching what ordinarily would have been rather questionable subject matter. In fact, Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education under Obama, made it his brainchild to create the Common Core State Standards. These were actually put together by a series of national governors who, in their association, decided that they would create a series of conduits through which each individual state would have access to its own taxpayer money. By holding this carrot over their heads, the Department of Education was able to ensure compliance with this nationalized curriculum through the Department of Education. And in fact, many state governors decided they had to bend the knee to be able to access their own federal tax dollars. Well, as it turns out, the testing has revealed that in states that admitted and utilized the Common Core State Standards and then participated in testing consortiums, whether the Partnership for Advanced College and Career Readiness, PARC, or through another testing consortium of similar type, it was revealed that, in fact, the greatest fears of those pundits, like yours truly, who had concerns with the Common Core State Standards, did indeed discover that the testing values dropped significantly. And indeed, for reading and for mathematics, the two big subject areas designed to be tested by both testing consortiums, scores dipped dramatically. there were a series of concerns that most educators, most conservative pundits saw that proved exactly to be true, one of which was the fact that mathematics was an adoption of what would be considered an Asian model of mathematics. It did not rely on rote memorization, but rather objectification, pictures, diagrams, and images that are not appropriate to the level in which they were introduced. Not only that, but there was a rather revisionist version of history that was being presented. And in addition to that, the English teaching material was given not only an access to more technical writing in favor of what would ordinarily have been classical literature pieces, that type of literature most equated with higher standardized test scores and increased levels of literacy, but indeed provided another conduit through which other opportunities to proselytize through progressive worldviews was driven. In fact, many of the consorting organizations that were involved in drafting the material themselves were very clear about where their politics and their policies stood. A number of other conservative pundits who were on the committee but who were given no right of refusal or appeal over the material taught were actually in very deep concern over the fact that the testing was not only appropriate, but the material itself was not only appropriate and turned what was understood to be successful pedagogy on its head. Yours truly wrote actually a significant brochure of many moons ago before it was revealed that most states were indeed going to be forced through tax dollars to turn it on its head. So Common Core, this set of national standards, curriculum and testing controlled by just a few, affects all of us because the majority of the states in the United States have accepted it as their program. Taxpayers, parents, concerned citizens, major educational changes have been subjected to an open discussion through individuals who themselves do not have experience in education. And Angela Wallace of Truth for Our Children, her founding organization, believes the best way to address that is by the forum she will be hosting this Saturday, April 27th at 8:30 in the morning. Our own Tony Perkins will be joining Angela to be able to speak to the progressivist ideals that have been pushed through like a funnel through the National Common Core States standards. The top-down controlled system is not only not in the best interests of educating individual students and leaves students like my own children, both of whom are on the autism spectrum, out in the cold because it does not provide for individualized education services, but it also eliminates the opportunity to gear testing toward material that is appropriate developmentally for these children. So for the listeners who are in Louisiana or in nearby states, I encourage you, as does our president, Tony Perkins, to attend the free seminar exposing the Common Core state standards at Greenwell Springs Baptist Church in the city of Central Louisiana this Saturday, April 27th at 8:30 a.m. For more information, go to truthforourchildren.com. Again, that's April 27th, this Saturday at 8:30 a.m. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. Coming up next, I'll talk to Jonathan Sings, the president of Texas Value Actions, an affiliate of FRC here in Austin. He'll explain how Chick-fil-A is the latest example of government punishing a family business because of what they believe. You're listening to Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juneau, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. We've got Angela Wallace with us, the President of Truth for Our Children. And I want her to talk just a little bit before we move on to our next segment about the event that she's holding in April on this Saturday, the 27th at 8:30 in the morning. Angela, thanks for being with us on Washington Watch.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me on.
So I'd like to find out a little bit from you about what you're hoping that this weekend's symposium will accomplish, because we understand, obviously, that Common Core is the law of the land for the most part, coast to coast, unless you are a very brave, for example, Mary Fallon, governor of Oklahoma, who decided unilaterally to back out. So now that we know what Common Core is, what are you hoping this symposium will do?
Well, what my hope and prayer is to make parents aware, because I really believe parents have been left out the loop. I believe many people, even in our own state, they think we do not have Common Core, when in reality, yes, we do. Mm-hmm. It's changed its name quite a few times. But it is to make the parents aware of the truth of what Common Core is really doing to our children, what it's doing to the education system, how it's affecting our children, how it is affecting our teachers, especially the teachers that really want to do the morally right thing. Many of them know that they are not, with this Common Core, they are not providing the kids what they really need to be able to succeed. So I know a lot of teachers, I know within our whole state, and I'm sure this is nationwide, are scared to speak out.
So, boy, that is exactly what we have been hearing as well. In fact, these poor teachers who are there in the classrooms doing the hard work are hamstrung by individuals who decided beyond them at the higher levels that this was indeed the curriculum they were going to teach. And so they really have no opportunity to work around it, do they?
That's right. And, you know, these teachers, many that I've talked to are 20-year veterans of teaching. They went to college. They know how to lesson plan. They know, they're trained to know what their students need. And with this Common Core standard curriculum, they know that they are not providing, and they're being told basically what to teach. So the skills that they have, they're not really able to utilize that. And, you know, it was explained to me, you can tell a person that I know what the problem is, and I have the skills and I have the tools that are needed to fix it, but I am not allowed to use those tools or those skills to fix it. And this is to bring awareness. God has put this fire in my heart for our children in the state of Louisiana and throughout the whole nation. And, you know, this is truly a worldwide. What they want is a one world education system. And this is dumbing down our children. This is indoctrinating our children. And many, I've gone in and looked through some of the curriculum in kindergarten through fifth grade. And you can see the anti-American thread that is throughout that. You can see the negative, just the emotional, the teaching in this curriculum. And these are kids, you know, that are kindergarten through fifth grade. And a lot of these kids, what is put in front of them, they believe it to be truth. They trust their teachers. You know, they trust their school. And a lot of them take it for what it is. And it is indoctrinating our children subtly. And by the time these kids are getting to college, they are fully indoctrinated. And I have talked to many people in my own state that have kids that are in college, and they're like, our children were very conservative. Our children had, you know, very good values. They're like, they're going off to college, and we can't even talk to our children now because they're so far left. So, you know, it's got to bring awareness in, and we have got to do something to stand up to save the future for these little kids, because someone's got to stand up and fight for them. And I see what this is. And my goal is to call people out to stand up, come hear the truth of what is going on, and let's stand together. Even as the body of Christ, the church needs to rally together for this. You know, we need to be a voice for the future of these little kids. And it is our job to stand and proclaim truth.
Angela, give me, in this short time that we have left, can you give me a website where people who are interested in attending can get more information about the event on Saturday?
Well, they can go and register at Eventbrite Truth and Education. They can call me. I really don't have a website right now. We are working at putting up a Facebook page, Truth for Our Children. And once we get that up, you know, that we'll have stuff going, posting on that. But right now the event is going to be this Friday and this Saturday at Greenville Springs Baptist Church. And I want to encourage everyone locally that is within driving distance to make every effort to come and attend, because we have Dr. Duke Pesta, we have Kathleen Benfield, and we have Tony Perkins. We also have Kathy Edmonston with the Bessie Board that will be speaking. I have a couple of legislators that will be speaking. I have invited every legislator in the state of Louisiana, along with school board members, superintendents, and trying to bring everyone together. And there will be question and answer time. So I want parents to come, and if they have any concerns and any questions, this is your time to come and speak out. And, you know, if any teachers are willing to come and speak with their concerns, because this is what we need to do in order to try and get something done to fix this and get a curriculum in our state and throughout this nation that is truly going to educate our children.
Angela Wallace, who is president of Truth for Our Children and who is helping put together the event at Greenwell Springs Baptist Church on Friday and Saturday, has been my guest. Thanks for being here, Angela. I'm going to shift gears, and I'm going to talk about everyone's favorite restaurant chain, who can't stop taking hits, although now there are individuals who are willing to push back. The San Antonio, Texas City Council, as you may remember, recently banned a Chick-fil-A from opening in the airport because of its Christian values. And the egregious attack followed a growing trend of anti-Christian intolerance and bigotry by the government against Christians for simply living out their faith and holding true to biblical mores. So joining me now to talk about some specific bills in the Texas legislature that will address the freedom to believe is Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values, which is an affiliate of Family Research Council. Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's great to be with you.
So, Jonathan, I am very encouraged by what I see, not only as an individual who values her own personal religious liberty, but as someone who really enjoys Chick-fil-A. You recently sponsored a Save Chick-fil-A Day at the state capitol as you unveiled two important bills. So can you tell me a little bit about that event and what turnout was like?
Well, it was absolutely extraordinary. And let me tell you, it was Holy Week. There was just the Holy Spirit was present. It was fantastic. I mean, we could not have asked for things to go better, exceeded our expectations. And what started as a response to the local government in the city of San Antonio, and I don't want to minimize it. San Antonio is one of the largest cities, not only in Texas, but in the country. And they specifically took a vote to ban Chick-fil-A from opening in a store at the San Antonio airport. I mean, such a drastic measure by the government discriminating against Chick-fil-A because of their religious beliefs, targeting because they gave donations to Christian ministries like the Salvation Army. And so we knew we had to have some type of response. Well, it just so happened there was pieces of legislation working their way through the legislative process at the Texas Capitol that would protect Chick-fil-A and other businesses in these type of situations, because we've seen these things kind of come up before. And so there's no surprise that you might have legislation that related to it, but the timing was absolutely incredible. Not only that, we wanted to raise awareness not only in Texas but across the country, because there have been close to 10 different local governments in San Jose, in Buffalo recently. Cincinnati tried to do something recently, Georgia. And so a lot of people aren't aware of that. But over the past couple of years, a number of governments have tried to do things legislatively or publicly to hurt Chick-fil-A. And so we found that people were really ready to do something, and they were very concerned. So it wasn't just about the Capitol, but it was throughout the state and out the country. Family Research Council was a part of it, First Liberty, American Family Association, Family Policy Alliance, Todd Starnes, Fox News, National, tons of coverage. We dominated the coverage of the issue that day. We were able to for people to see that this was a legitimate and a recent religious liberty issue to get on board with and to take action. And then we had a legislative hearing at our Capitol on the same day, April 17th, and we had a 12-hour hearing, which they included other bills, but it was towards the end of that hearing where we had hundreds of people there. We outnumbered the opposition, and we're able to get our message heard. House Bill 3172 is the First Amendment Defense Act, which some are also calling the Save Chick-fil-A Bill, and it makes it clear that if the government allows people to seek to at the airports and places like that, if they want to bid for contracts, that you can't be excluded or punished or blocked out of the process because the owners have religious beliefs. But that's what San Antonio has done so far. And so the other bill is House Bill 1035, and it's a little bit more broad. It's called the Free to Believe Act. It deals with issues like Jack Phillips, the cake baker, and things of that nature. And so, but tremendous support. Thousands of people have already contacted their legislator. And for your Texas audience, I want people to know right now what we need is people to contact their House and Senate member and ask them to co-author House Bill 3172, which some people are calling the Save Chick-fil-A Bill.
So I want to also make it clear to our listening audience that when this legislation came to pass, and it was perfectly timed, again, God's divine providence, we love to see things like this happen because we understand the battle is not ours, but it is the Lord's. And we did, as you mentioned, participate in a social media campaign last Wednesday, helping with the Save Chick-fil-A campaign. We are so excited to see that there is pending legislation on the books that would address this precise situation. But factually, it has to be stated that Chick-fil-A serves everyone equally. They do not discriminate in their service of food to any individual based on any discriminatory category or with any animus, but instead, the San Antonio City Council targeted Chick-fil-A to remove this contract based on the fact that they had donated to Christian charities. Talk a little bit about the fact that this was really a bit of a reach on the city council's part.
Absolutely. I mean, and look, we have people at the hearing that are gay. We had people that were Democrats here in Texas. This is not a partisan issue. It's not necessarily, to some people, you know, issues that fall between Christians versus people in the LGBT community. It was government overreach at its worst. And so I think a lot of people were shocked that the government, the city council, some of their members would go so far to do this. And to your point, right, Chick-fil-A has really worked hard. So this was not about anything that happened in a restaurant or one of their employees. And so they actually have policies that make it clear they don't discriminate on these issues. And so it was a donation that somebody reported. I think it was some I heard Think Progress or some particular.
Think Progress, advocate. It was indeed. Yep.
Yeah, some activist entity that wants to make Chick-fil-A look bad or that wants to bring negative attention that went through some painstaking process to find out who they donated to. And they gave money. They made a donation, a charitable contribution to an entity like Salvation Army, which feeds the homeless, takes care of the poor. It is without question charitable. And also entities like Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And so it was those donations that they used as a basis to say, we don't like that. We don't like that you're giving money to help the poor because that's a Christian entity you're giving to. And some people just, you know, whatever their opinion is about things that Chick-fil-A may have done and said in the past, they really targeted them. And here's the other thing, too, I want people to know. Well, and first of all, that was a couple of weeks ago. But then the very next morning, after our hearing on Wednesday, San Antonio was requested by one of their council members, and they're in the middle of an election. Okay, local elections are happening right now, so there's a ton of attention on elected officials. So there was a request to have a rehearing on this just to try to get it on the agenda for a couple of weeks from now. And so they brought the issue up, but there was a sitting state senator there, Donna Campbell. They refused to allow her to speak and address during public time. They refused to even recognize her presence at the meeting. And they did take a vote, 6-5, essentially, again, voting down any effort to reconsidering this, and for a second time, voting to effectively ban Chick-fil-A. And so there's been a lot of concern about how extreme and how far the city of San Antonio wants to go with this on such a narrow issue and clearly, I think, an unconstitutional area. But unless we have something in state law that makes it clear, we're afraid we're going to see more governments do this, and San Antonio is going to get away with it for at least for now. And so that's why we're asking people to take action with House Bill 3172 here in Texas. But wherever you are, you can hashtag Save Chick-fil-A. You can post about these things and continue this momentum and this movement. Because while you may be in line from time to time when you're at Chick-fil-A and think, hey, they're doing okay, when the governments that are targeting start adding up, at some point, it's likely to have an impact on not only on their businesses, but other businesses that could be affected as well.
HB 3172 is the bill. And my guest today has been Jonathan Sines of Texas Values, a good friend of ours. Follow him and this campaign, SaveChickFilet.com. As a reminder, go to TonyPerkins.com for today's podcast and information. And we will see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.